Let's cross to Australia. However, plenty is always on Karen Middleton's agenda today. And Karen, I'm just looking at our Deputy Prime Minister popping up in the news the last hour or so, saying it's time for us to get to level one, time to ease more restrictions, it's time for us to have a trans-Tasman bubble. How is it happening on your side, however?
Yes, we are easing too. People are very happy with the situation in terms of the infection over here, Catherine. We're at the stage where I think we're getting about 15 new cases emerging every day on average. We've had 102 deaths, very sadly, and 7,123 cases this morning, as of this morning, overall have been found and detected in Australia. They've upped the testing now. They're very keen for anybody with any symptoms that might be remotely linked to COVID-19 to get tested, because that's the way they think they'll really stamp out the spread among people who might be asymptomatic or only very mild symptoms. So we are seeing across the country restrictions easing. The state governments and territory governments here are making their own decisions in that regard. So it's happening at different stages in different places. And the state of Victoria is perhaps the most cautious and easing back at the slowest rate. But here in Canberra, we saw some easing in the last week or two with us allowed to go back to restaurants in very small numbers, 10 people maximum, and still maintaining the social distancing of 2 square metres per person. And 1.5 metres between you, and that they will ease even further at the coming weekend. So gradually we're opening, but there's a great deal of nervousness about what that might mean and whether we will see a second wave. There's some fear of some degree of a spike, although we have seen in the news this morning suggestions that the medical officer from New South Wales has been privately briefing politicians that she thinks that the virus is contained in Australia. That's a pretty optimistic view, fingers crossed, but that would be fantastic. When we look at the statistics, as I'm sure you do, in Europe and North America and indeed in South America, it's horrific over there. So we feel very fortunate that we've got on top of it as much as we have.
What will get interesting in the next wee while over this trans-Tasman bubble is this word elimination in New Zealand, which, as it is being used by the health officials, doesn't mean you're never going to have another case, but it means that, we've had zero cases for many days now, it means that you'll be in a position to be able to respond to any imported case. We're sort of technically slightly in a different place, but there will be a really strong desire to try and get the people-to-people contacts happening again, but they're going to have to nut out their rules and definitions, aren't they?
Yes, and we're all learning these medical terms of elimination and suppression and what the difference is actually in real terms. Our Prime Minister and your Prime Minister had a conversation yesterday on the phone. Our Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, gave an address to the National Press Club yesterday laying out his plans for the economy, or part of his plans for the economy, and sort of dropped into that address that he'd spoken to Jacinda Ardern yesterday morning. He wasn't giving away much in terms of detail, but clearly they are still talking about this idea of a trans-Tasman bubble. And in fact, when he was taking questions from journalists after the speech, he said it may well be the case that we can travel from Australia to New Zealand, Auckland, Wellington, other parts, before we can travel from Sydney to the Gold Coast in Australia. So there is a bit of pressure on some of the state governments here to open up their borders. And some places have had some states and territories have got a better record at suppression than others. In some places there are zero new infections. The ACT here has no new infections at the moment. But there's nervousness on the part, particularly of Queensland, but Western Australia and some other states, that they don't want people coming from the higher infection areas and the big population centres of Sydney and Melbourne and coming across their borders until they're absolutely sure they're not going to see a spike in reinfections. So Anastasia Palaszczuk, who's the Premier of the state of Queensland, is particularly under pressure. We're seeing a bit of a public brawl between her and Gladys Berejiklian, who's the Premier of New South Wales, who really wants the northern border open. And at the moment, the Queensland Premier is resisting that. But so we are seeing these things happen at different stages. And it is, I suppose, possible that we could be coming to visit you before we can go and lie on a beach in Queensland.
That seems just extraordinary, doesn't it? And I can't recall what the Prime Minister's ever said about that. I mean, there's always been this assumption that Australia would have to sort its internal border travel out before it was trans-Tasman. But look, who knows? All right, let's look. This has been looming for a wee while, actually. Clearly, your Prime Minister for a while has been wanting to make some changes to industrial laws, regulations. What's happening?
Yeah, well, it's very interesting. The coalition government, which is the Conservative government, as you know, has long had this totemic issue of industrial relations that it wanted to address. There's long been a view that the unions have too much power in Australia, and they've taken a lot of steps to try and curtail that in government. Most recently, they've set up a piece of legislation called the Ensuring Integrity Bill, but known colloquially as the Union Busting Bill, which was really aimed at trying to stop what they say were standover tactics, particularly in the construction industry and involving one quite militant union. That bill has had a struggle to get through the parliament, but what the government is now doing in the wake of the new outbreak of cooperation through the pandemic, which has seen the head of the union movement and the industrial relations minister becoming, you know, new best friends, talking all the time and trying to sort out some of the urgent problems that have emerged in the industrial landscape because of the pandemic. They're trying to harness that now and move forward with a new era of collaboration on sorting out some of the most intractable problems in the industrial landscape, like the situation with awards, like the casualisation of the workforce, which is a particular issue for the union movement. Greenfields agreements for new industries, number of different things that have been particularly problematic, and of course the compliance and law enforcement issue around the behaviour on work sites. And now the government is saying, okay, we're going to set up, try and harness this new cooperation. They're setting up 5 task groups to cover those kinds of areas. They're setting a deadline of September for the parties to try and come to some kind of consensus to make changes to improve the situation in each of those areas, because we've got a federal budget that is normally in May but has been shifted to October this year. So he wants to get that try and bed that process down before October. It's a pretty short time frame for organisations that have traditionally been pretty hostile. The Prime Minister's line on this is, we want you to put down your weapons and come to the table together. But he is saying, we are booking the room and setting up the chairs and the rest of it is up to you. So he's very much saying, we're just brokering this deal. You guys have got to forge it yourselves, or we're just setting the circumstances for it. People are starting to draw comparisons with the 1980s and 90s when the late Bob Hawke's Labor government forged what was called the Prices and Incomes Accord, known as the Accord for short, with the union movement, which really dictated relations and quite harmonious relations for more than a decade, and then that fell apart after that period. This, of course, is not a Labor government, so it might be a more difficult thing to forge, and I think everyone will have a different idea of what that consensus should look like. So it may not be a smooth process, and it may be deemed to have been actually quite politically clever on Scott Morrison's part, because it really is forcing the unions to the table. One wonders where that leaves the Labor Party in all of this, which normally would have seen the unions as an ally of its own. If the unions go ahead and we see peace and love break out in our time with a coalition government. So it's quite politically clever. It would be a huge breakthrough if we did see some advances on things like casualisation, on the compliance issue, on wages, which have been stagnant for a long time. Whether we get there is another thing, but it's an interesting idea, and he put it forward yesterday.
It is interesting because the word had been that he was looking to a much tougher sort of anti-union type move. What's happened to that?
I've neglected to mention the key point there, that union busting bill I mentioned. He has now said, we will set that aside. We will not proceed with that. And that was his gesture of goodwill to encourage the unions to the table. Now, he was struggling to get it through anyway, but that is a good and a significant gesture. And it makes it very difficult for the unions to then turn around and say, no, we won't cooperate, because he's made this gesture. So the pressure, I think, is really on them, on their side at the moment.
I suppose the issue is, if it fails and nothing comes out of it, or it's just a sort of a standoff that can't be resolved, does that give him the grounds to look towards legislation again? It'll be very interesting to see how that one unfolds. Now, mm-hmm. Rugby league, of course, it was just about, apart from the combat sports, just about first out of the blocks, wasn't it, in getting a season underway again?
Yeah, we see the matches starting again this weekend. We've got the New Zealand Warriors over here. They've been here for a couple of weeks, left their families behind for the duration, and were sequestered in the town of Tamworth, which embraced them, and they've had a very warm relationship with for the first couple of weeks that they were here training there. There's going to be this sort of ISO season now, where we will see no crowds at stadiums certainly for the first part of the season, just trying to get the matches underway. And this is really very focused on advertising revenue, I have to say. I mean, it will be a crowd pleaser at a distance as well, but the rugby league has really struggled financially, and what this pandemic has exposed is its dire financial situation. It lost its chief executive, Todd Greenberg, in the middle of all this as a result of that pressure on money. And Peter Volandis, who's the chairman who's stepped into the breach, is really pushing forward with quite a radical agenda to get the game up and running again. You know, we fear what might happen if there's a single outbreak of infection anywhere among the players or the staff. But at this stage, everybody's remaining positive and trying to push ahead with this. Peter Volandis said he would like to have crowds back in stadiums from July. I'm not sure how realistic that is, but we'll see. It's certainly something that they're proceeding with, and rugby league fans will be absolutely thrilled to see matches back on the telly. I'm sure they've been watching a lot of Netflix and all sorts of other things at home in isolation. Now they get to watch some sport as well, and then we'll see the Australian Football League, the AFL, following soon after.
Yeah, it's the replays have been doing everyone's heads in, I think. Just a minute left. Following the overturning of his case, the Catholic Cardinal George Pell, is there now a contempt charge being brought on his behalf against media for breaching suppression orders?
Well, no, it's actually the DPP in the state of Victoria doing this. They were very angry that you'll remember there was a blanket suppression order on this case for a very long time. And then at one point before the Cardinal was finally sentenced and convicted, I think maybe at the time he was convicted, some people published the details of this. Now there are 11 media organisations and 9 individual journalists being charged with contempt, and they will face court proceedings that will go ahead later this year. So very interesting test case on public's right to know versus issues of fairness in law and justice.
Is that your public prosecutor? Is that what that title means?
Yes, I'm sorry, Director of Public Prosecutions.
Yeah, no, that's fine. That's fine. Thank you very much, Karen Middleton, our correspondent in Canberra.